Thank you. Let's go next to the situation that the teaching staff are into. Talk first, we talked a little bit off air about the hierarchy of teaching and how education's delivered, and then go right into some of the problems and demands around the working condition that the teaching staff have at UC Berkeley and the larger system.
In terms of the hierarchy that the faculty and teaching staff face at UC Berkeley, one of the problems is that there is a huge division of labor. So we have the academic senate faculty, so the tenure track faculty who teach a lot of the courses that are large lecture courses and also seminar courses, upper division courses. And these are largely courses that relate to the research that professors are doing. So we have the tenure track faculty, and then we have graduate students who also teach. So they often teach reading and composition courses. They teach sections for students so that they have smaller sections in these large lecture courses. And then we have lecturers who are at the very bottom of the scale. So in terms of the way that the hierarchy is set up, you might have a lecturer who has been at the university for 10 years, 6 years, but when budget cuts go down, a graduate student will actually get priority and will be rehired, whereas that lecturer who's been here for years could be one of the first to go in terms of the faculty. So one of the challenges that lecturers in particular are facing is that we have become a very expendable working force on the campus. So Berkeley has been lucky so far in that we haven't had as many lecturer layoffs as some of the other UC campuses, but at UCLA, for example, all of the lecturers in the College of Letters and Sciences were given layoff notices, which means lecturers in the language program and also in the writing program will potentially not be there in the fall semester, which means that the entire educational system is going to have to be restructured. So requirements are going to have to be suspended, like the writing and language requirements, if these lecturers are not available to teach the classes.
Within that hierarchy, it seems like UC Berkeley has a good reputation, and it seems like it in a lot of the universities, public or private, where the school has a high level of reputation for delivering education. NYU is a good example. I was covering some issues over there. The professors are actually much more removed from education than at a less prestigious university, because their professional research, the grants that come in, the work that's done through these departments with students and faculty is what generates the revenue and the reputation. The grad students and the adjunct faculty are delivering more of the direct classroom education. So in the real sense, the professor's the lecturer. They may lecture some classes. The actual teacher is in the other categories. I've been adjunct faculty, and that's just the contract laborer generally. People are paid a modest fee per class and are given classes as to what's available. It's better as a part-time casual labor job than someone trying to piece together a living at it. When I would do that, there was no time on campus, no office hours, no offices. Materials were limited, and you just do the best that you can. You either find an arrangement to put more of your time into spending with the students who need help, or you just go in and deliver the class and leave it at that. So talk about the, you know, the financial and the pay issues. The grad students have other issues because all across the country, I know Yale, NYU, in other situations, there's a fight with those graduate students as to whether they're actually even a worker or whether this is an extension of their program. And then with the lecturer, it's a matter of pay and resources. So what are the lecturers and the grad students facing up to as far as what's needed and what's going to be demanded?
Well, first, you raised the question of pay issues and the lack of resources that lecturers have, or specifically adjunct faculty. I also teach at a community college as an adjunct instructor, and I would have to say that compared to adjunct instructors at community colleges, lecturers at Berkeley actually do have quite a lot of resources, despite the fact that we are still some of the most underpaid workers on campus. So we do, for example, have office space. We do have access to computers, and this is not necessarily true at community colleges. In terms of some of the demands that we're facing, the lecturers face a difficult situation because there are divisions even within the lecturers themselves. We have what we call pre-6 lecturers. So these are lecturers who have not taught at the university for 6 years and who have not passed their merit review yet. These lecturers are hired from semester to semester. And then we have post-6 lecturers who have more seniority. They have continuing status and are hired for 3 years at a time. So they have relatively more job security. The problem, though, is that neither of these lecturers really have any job security, as we can see with the layoff notices that have been issued across the UC system. If the administration would like to completely restructure or get rid of a program, it's very easy to do because we are seen as flexible faculty. So one of the demands that we are considering is whether it would be possible to allow lecturers to have more job security. Our contract is reopening in the spring. So what the union, UCAFT, needs to do is to figure out whether we are going to extend our contract or whether we are going to reopen it for bargaining and make some demands about job security, among other things. But again, all of this has to be discussed with the members themselves and the union leadership themselves. As far as graduate students, it seems like the graduate students at UC Berkeley do see themselves as workers. They actually have been one of the most powerful mobilizing units on campus, especially for September 24th. They had hundreds of signatures on their petitions to walk out on the 24th. They have been actively going to each other's classes to inform students about the situation. And in terms of the upcoming November 18th through the 20th strike, they are willing to put their jobs on the line. So I would say that the graduate students probably see themselves in a much more similar position to the lecturers than to the faculty.
Tony, you're a what I might term as support staff worker, as opposed to the teachers, not actually delivering educational services, but different categories of workers all over the university who have jobs here to help a university run. Talk about some of the demands of those workers who have, from what I understand, been historically underpaid. They probably have job security, but historically underpaid compared to similar classifications of private sector workers. So what are some of the problems with the other categories of workers and the demands that are being made currently, you know, including from maybe about a year ago when workers were starting to step forward and enter into new contractual demands?
The staff at UC, there is a lot of staff that are unionized at UC. There are over 14 unions on campus. But what's happened with the most recent round of pay cuts, as you mentioned, it is actually a continuation of many of the same fights that working people at UC have faced for many years. But it's intensified in the last year. So what's coming down against the staff right now? We're facing 4 to 10% pay cuts in the form of furloughs. And as you mentioned, we're already underpaid. The clericals, the service workers, including janitors and gardeners and other people who provide, you know, day-to-day services, we're anywhere from 20 to 25% underpaid according to, you know, current market rates. We're actually paid less than even the Cal State and Community College staff that does similar work. We're also, you know, and the irony is that a lot of the lower paid staff are the ones that are really being hit the hardest by these pay cuts, or the threat of the pay cuts, because a lot of us are women, we're immigrants, we're people of color, people who might have been traditionally shut out of private sector jobs, which is one of the, you know, things that we're trying to fight for as we organize, to point out that these cuts really hit those on the bottom the hardest. We're also facing layoffs. The university is trying to force the unionized staff to take the furloughs. People who work here who are not unionized, on October 1st, they started getting their pay reduced in their paycheck. But the union staff has trying to fight back. And we're being threatened then with, we have had layoffs in every campus. And UC is threatening temporary layoffs if we don't accept the furloughs. But we're all bargaining and trying to say that these furloughs are not necessary. And the threat of layoffs is really, you know, what one of the biggest things that we're trying to organize against because of the impact. Obviously, people need a job. We're also facing outsourcing. The university has a long history of union busting and trying to, you know, undermine union staff, but they've basically contracted out many of the different jobs that used to be done here on campus by permanent workers, including janitorial work and other construction work. We have increased workload. There's a hiring freeze on campus. So all the people who still work here basically are doing more work for less pay. And they're not able to fill the gaps of people who have been either quit or had their jobs, you know, taken away by layoffs or who have left through attrition. And that also impacts health and safety issues because with increased workload, you have more stress, more chance for occupational injury, et cetera. And the university is constantly facing unfair labor practice charges on these different issues. Several of our unions have been on strike, and we had a strike on September 24th in conjunction with the student and faculty walkout that was initiated by UPD, one of the unions on campus, but supported by most of the other unions, including my union, Q. So I think the idea here is that we have a lot of consciousness that we have to fight back together. Striking is one of our most powerful weapons, and we want to tell UC that we will use this weapon because they're pushing us to the wall and they're unwilling to bargain fairly. So the upcoming November Regents meeting in UCLA is going to hopefully be a day, a week of protests, of teach-ins, of walkouts, and of strikes, and we're trying to build for that right now. And I think a lot of the staff here really see the privatization of the university, as a horrible development that's not new, but also we do always also face the issue that the university is not run democratically. And we are trying to say that UC should open its budget so that the campus community and the public to whom the university is accountable has a say-so in how they allocate their funds. So it's basically being run as a private corporation with those on the bottom, you know, being the ones attacked the worst. And I think in these times of economic crisis, we need more education, not less, and workers need jobs. I mean, certainly decreased access is a horrible impact. And it certainly is having a very hard impact on the staff that we're trying very hard to fight against. I can go on and on, but...
No, I have a question. Where I work in Health and Human Services in the public system, we have unions, and there's been an increase in unionized workers outside of the government. These were basically non-union jobs. There's been an increase of union activity. Organizations like SEIU have reached down lower and unionized workers such as janitors, health generalists, home health care workers. A lot of our contracts, however, are weak. They have no strike clauses. They have no solidarity strike clauses. So you're actually in a situation where the only actions that could be taken if contractual negotiations between the hierarchy and the union and management break down, which they always do now, and if we did anything that would work, you know, a little social service unit trying to go on the street on its own is not going to have a lot of clout, but anything that we would do that would work would be a violation of our contract and put us at risk of just being tossed out and trying to fight our way back in with dubious legal status. Are there any of those type of restrictions in your contract, or is your contract more open to system-wide actions across the entire state system?
There are a number of, you know, regressive aspects of our contracts. So, you know, the contracts are not all the same, but UC did basically push for many years to get no strike clauses implemented in our contracts. And unfortunately, the unions didn't fight hard enough on that demand. So there is, restrictions against sympathy strikes and even striking. However, I think there's a lot of understanding that if collectively we do, you know, the law is one thing, but it's not enforceable if the entire workforce sticks together and unites. I don't think they're going to fire every worker at UC if we go on strike together. So some of what we're trying to do is build that cross-union solidarity and really to at the moment, some of the unions are in bargaining, so AFT, Q, and UPD, and AFSCME, which has fought very hard against UC's, limits to union staff. They currently have a contract. So what we're trying to do is put our strength in numbers and ignore some of those laws or go around them, because the fact is that workers, one does have the right not to cross a picket line. So we're trying to build the confidence of the staff to say that striking is a right. It's something that we don't take lightly because of the impact on working people, but we want to also get rid of some of those very oppressive clauses in our contracts. UC has a large latitude on layoffs. They do have to bargain with us on the furloughs and to some extent on layoffs, but we would like to strengthen our contract. If anything, the fact that they're trying to cut our pay, we're trying to fight for something in exchange, like stronger language on grievances, on things like our right to strike, and guarantees against layoffs, and use some of this as leverage, but the university is having none of it, and they're trying to force us to go to impasse where they can basically implement a draconian contract. So there's a lot of pressure, and I think one of our best strategies is also to reach out to other public sector unions and private sector unions that we understand that solidarity is crucial, and an injury to one is an injury to all. So the fight at UC has bigger implications, and I think we need to take the example of, you know, really asking for support when we are out there on the picket line. And we are trying to unionize some of the non-union staff. That's another effort that's been taken up that is, you know, going to be developing in the next year, because I think more people realize more than ever that we need a union to at least try and protect our interests, although ultimately it's not going to, you know, be enough. We really need to change this whole system where profits are constantly put before people's needs and workers' needs, and, you know, we have to look at our whole society, including how education is treated as a commodity.
Let me see if I had.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay. In terms of the students and workers, I think that and workers to mobilize together in this fight, because both of those factions of the universe, both of those, the students and the workers are essentially the bodies that will be, that are being completely erased from this system. And the students and the workers are really taking on a heavy load because of these budget cuts and because of the mismanagement of the budget by the UDOF administration. And they're at the same time facing, I should say they're both facing, you know, poverty in different contexts. The workers are facing poverty because they are making, you know, less than $50,000 a year, being laid off at the same time, being threatened with pay cuts, or right now what they're saying is they're giving the workers, or they're expressing to the workers the possibility of temporary layoffs, which is basically going to just be, it's a furlough, it's a pay cut, it's just using it under the terms that are in their union contract so they can get away with it. And it's not right. The workers are really in a bad situation. At the same time, the students, their education is impoverished. The quality of their education is not going to be there, if their education is even a possibility for some at all anymore. And these two groups uniting together, which they already have, the Student Worker Action Team has brought the students and workers together. The Solidarity Alliance has brought students, workers, and the faculty together to really increase our numbers and mobilize to gain momentum and to gain power. And that's the most important thing about the students and workers standing together, is that we make the university and we have the power to change the university. We just have to know that we have that, and we have to believe it. And I think that it's just becoming really clear to everyone that we have no choice but to fight together, because we can't lose this fight, and we will win it as long as we don't give up.
For the last point of discussion, Tony, you can talk to this. For a context, what could a university system look like? In my times a long time ago of living abroad and traveling abroad, I had discussions over university educational systems in Cuba and Zimbabwe, countries that are racked with political and economic problems. And both of them, at least Zimbabwe in the 80s and Cuba now, are able to provide affordable higher educations for people where we're not. So even though they're not model countries, as far as what the world would like to see, they may be more model educational systems. So talk in detail about what a socialist system would look like and what some of the more radical demands for education in the United States are.
Yeah, speaking as someone who's seen over time the, you know, the constant fighting for crumbs when we live in the richest country in the world, whether it's healthcare, education, housing, I eventually became radicalized, and as a socialist feminist can see that even immediately we could solve the most pressing crisis facing U.S. working people by stopping the war funding, which is completely draining the resources that should be, you know, supported. And we could tax the rich and corporations and fund these very basic things like we've been talking about today. But at the moment, our political system is beholden to business interests. So we see that both the Republican Party and the Democratic Party, you know, just constantly giving in to profiteers, and they don't have the political will to really to fight for making corporations pay even a minimum fair share. So I think the example of Cuba is one, it's a very poor country, and they do, as you said, have many problems there, but because they did have a revolution in their country where they, you know, when in the early days of their revolution, they had only one university in the entire island. And most of the people in Cuba were either domestic workers or prostitutes or laborers in the fields. And now they have over 3,000 universities, and public education is a guaranteed right, despite, again, the hardships they face. You can get free school from, you know, pre-kindergarten through college in Cuba. That's because they prioritize that. The same with healthcare. I think the Cuban healthcare model is one that many countries look to because they do provide healthcare from cradle to grave. That's because, again, they put that as a priority instead of private profit and billionaires, you know, making untold wealth at the expense of the needs of humans. So I think we're going to see more and more of these divisions as the rich get richer and the poor are struggling and we're being squeezed more and more and more. And again, we have so much wealth in this country that it's obscene to be facing this. But I think we can unite and overcome the divisions that have traditionally kept us apart, whether it's racism, sexism, homophobia, or you know, pitting immigrant against native born, all these different ways that we're, you know, that working people are trying, are pitted against.
Competition.
Are put in competition with each other for dwindling resources. But we have, I think Marika put it beautifully, like if we have the confidence and the understanding that we can change the system and it does not have to be this way, then, you know, the world really could be our oyster and we really could share the wealth amongst the people who create it and have a much more humane and beautiful society, let alone, you know, addressing environmental problems and all the other things that are facing us as the world goes, you know, more and more towards extremes of rich and poor. So I think through our grassroots organizing, through building solidarity, and hopefully through reaching out even beyond the campus community to people in the state and in the country to say we can't take it anymore, we don't want this and we need change, then I think we can really make that change, and we have to, because our lives are at stake and we deserve better, and I think we can win our demands if we keep building and keep mobilizing and to see that, you know, this is our chance. We have a window of opportunity right now that is unique, and we need to take advantage of it.
Okay, thanks to the three of you, and I'll be staying on this story for people in the community to hear.